Final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Let's head over to the campus of Vanderbilt, West End. Let's talk to their head coach. He should be smiling from ear to ear. What a Saturday night for the Commodores. 24-21 victory over Colorado State, and their head coach now joins us. Clark, how you doing? Congratulations on your first win as a head coach of Vanderbilt.
I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks so much. It was an exciting night. And just as everything in the season, we have to shift quickly to what's next. So we enjoyed it on Saturday and met about it yesterday, and now we're on to Stanford.
It's easy getting wins in college football, isn't it? That was just an easy one, huh? In all seriousness, what was it like? What was going through your head and your team's head at that point after everything we had talked about last week, everything that happened in week one, and you find yourselves in a 14-0 hole?
Well, I don't know for us that it could have happened any differently. We needed that adversity, like, because the whole message in the week was, you know, we have to find the fighting spirit. We can't let the scoreboard dictate to us what our effort level is. And truthfully, to be fair to these players, I mean, they have shown up with energy and enthusiasm and spirit every day. They filled a lot of long workouts in the summer and in the weight room, and it's not like we're blaring music down there. I mean, they're making their own noise. They have it in them. It just, you know, the first game, what we learned was there's a psychological hurdle to, you know, battling the adversity the scoreboard reflects. And so we messaged that all week. They took ownership over it. And again, for us in our evolution, you know, I'd like to start faster as a program. I'd like to play dominant football for four quarters, but I think it was an important moment for us, and it revealed the idea that we can get through adversity together, that we don't ever pull punches, that we bring the full force of Vanderbilt football no matter what the scoreboard indicates, and you know, and good things will happen.
Yeah, it must have been satisfying to you and your staff, because you're always trying to figure out if the buy-in is there, right? And that's exactly what you said to us. You're right. Everything you had laid out to your team, you told us last week, and it was about the fight. It was about, you know, just all the stuff that you laid out there. And sure enough, you lose a game like that in week one, and nobody believes you anymore. Everybody's counted you out. And then you go out there, you're a touchdown underdog, and you're down 14-0, and sure enough, there is a buy-in, because they started chipping away, and the next thing you know, you come away with a victory, 24-21. So I guess for you and your staff, it must be satisfying knowing that, I guess, the kids are listening.
Yeah, and we this is a relationship-driven business, and so we work hard on the relationships in the building, and I think it's a learning process too, and so you kind of learn the need of the team, and you fill the need with the message, and you know, that's what we did. I mean, I think one of the challenges that any program has, but I think particularly for us, is, and I've spoken about this even up until the day I took the job, is how do we insulate ourselves from outside opinion? And that's not to say that we don't understand that, you know, how our performance is measured, and we want to put on a good show, and we want people to get excited about what they're watching on the field. But at the same time, you know, we can't pull our confidence from results. That's just not a healthy way to build a program. There has to be a process-driven approach. There has to be intentional preparation that fuels the confidence. And, you know, what we saw on Saturday were signs of progress in our fighting spirit, in our you know, four-quarter competitive mindset. That regardless of how the game turned out on Saturday, that we learn from, and we look to replicate, and then we look to add in elements of, hey, can we start fast? Can we be a little more detailed early in our execution? You know, can we balance energy with focus so that we have, you know, we're in our optimal zone for our optimal performance against Stanford?
Coach, for years we worked with Derek Mason, not the guy you replaced, but the longtime NFL receiver, Derek Mason. And he used to tell us all the time about receivers and having dog in them. Boy, Chris Pierce has dog in him. Man, he had some huge catches in that game.
Yeah, it's funny. I recruited Chris when I was at Wake Forest, and I was recruiting him to play linebacker, I thought he would be an incredible linebacker. But I think that's the reason I lost out on him there, because he wanted to catch the ball, and I'm actually glad he made that decision, because he can be a difference maker for us. He was on Saturday. Physically, he's imposing. You know, he can help spring some runs in the run game too with his blocking. But what a challenge for anyone to cover him one on one on the sideline. And as Ken gets comfortable, as the chemistry develops, I only see that relationship strengthening over the year, which is an exciting call for us.
Does anybody say anything to your kicker in that spot? Any words of encouragement, or you just let it be? How does that work?
Total confidence. I mean, I was already with Jesse processing through what the 2-minute drive was going to be like, knowing that the kick was going through. So Joe's been consistent, you know, all camp and early in the season. Obviously, hit a big one against East Tennessee State that started the scoring in that game. Unfortunately, we weren't able to support it with any other points, but he Joe's a winner, and we had full confidence in him, and I don't think anyone needed to say much, but we certainly celebrated with him afterwards.
We're talking to Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee, coming off of the win against Colorado State on Saturday. They've got Stanford coming in this weekend. Coach, just on a side note, some really interesting, when you get a story nationally, like it was in the Washington Post, I think USA Today did something too, a really unique thing. You know, it's funny how sometimes a national story gets your attention. I hadn't really heard this locally here, but tell us about Tommy Smith. It's a really cool thing. The 32-year-old ex-military man who decided he had 1 year left of eligibility. He comes back. He's made your roster as a tight end. And what value you think he has to your squad?
Well, Tommy's, where do you start? First of all, he's closer in age to me than he is to most of the players in the locker room. But with that said, I mean, he's, you know, and obviously with his military background, he's an unbelievable connector, and he's an unbelievable leader. And the he spoke to our team on Friday before we left to go to Colorado State, and he just shared, what September 11th meant to him, and shared a little bit about his experience in his service, and it was remarkable. And the players just really connect with him and respect him and love him. And so he adds an element of experience, some perspective for them. He also played at Notre Dame. That's where he started, and so he's got the vantage point of what that program was like and the elements of that program that we've introduced here, you know, he can give perspective to as well. So it's just, it's a really great relationship. And he is a great contributor to that locker room, and obviously helps us in our service teams, through the week in practice. And we're fortunate to have him.
When he reached out to you and it came to your desk, hey, you know, what do you think of bringing this guy on? Where did you think it could go? Or how much did you have to learn about him before you said, you know what, this will be good. This will be good for him. This will be good for our team.
It was almost immediate, because, you know, someone who has the military experience, I know he's in great shape. I know he has mental toughness. Someone who's crazy enough to want to play, you know, college football at his age. I kind of like that mentality too. You know, he's a husband and a father. So he's got plenty to do, and yet he loves the game of football and wants to be a part of it and loves the brotherhood, the tribe that's built. And, that feeling of that sense of belonging comes through in Tommy's interaction every single day. And so for me, you know, kind of knowing all that about him as we started to talk about it, I was excited at the possibility. And once I met him and listened to this guy, as the world gets to know him, he's going to be just wildly successful. He's everything that you'd want in a leader, whether that's in a football setting or in a business setting. He's fantastic. So once I met him, I was like, well, we have to have this guy, because he's a winner and he's going to help us build the foundation of this program. And he has. And so again, we're fortunate to have him. And, I learned from him and his experience as well, and honor his service and sacrifice.
A lot of people have asked you about just weathering the storm in the first part of the game where you had the rough week the first week and now you're in a big hole again. But I thought it was equally impressive for a team that hadn't won in a while. In the sort of the chess match that it became in the fourth quarter, you're protecting a lead. They break through and tie the game, but you guys show a lot of poise to hang in there and get the ball down the field, manage the clock well, get in position, make the field goal. We've certainly seen plenty of times where a team that hasn't had success doesn't execute very well in those situations. You had to be pretty excited about how your guys reacted in that situation.
You know, it was I was excited for you know, the moment. I was energized. So much of what we have talked about was manifested in that game. It's a one possession game in the fourth quarter. You know, we felt like we were the better mentally and physically conditioned team in that game. And I think for our play in an altitude game where that was a lot of, you know, what people wanted to talk about, how are you going to handle the altitude? I felt like we were able to impose our will late. I was disappointed, and I think there was great learning in the touchdown that we gave up to tie the game, because, you know, we have to have the answers on the call sheet and the execution in the moment to take away the best player on the field for the offense. I think it's a great learning moment for us moving forward, both as coaches and as players. But then to get back, I mean, it's hard to explain the confidence that I had in that last drive, and just the awareness that we were going to win the game. It was going to happen because this is what we prepared for. And so much of the challenge is, you know, you can be so sound in your preparation and the way you're set up, your way you're structured, your systems. We have a great strength program with Brandon Horgan, who has built, you know, a conditioning level work capacity into this roster that's going to allow us to separate in those moments. You know, how do you get past the static, the mental static, the psychological barriers that exist when you're learning how to win? And so certainly, you know, in the moment, rather than to press, rather than to feel like, even a sense of despair when they tied the game, there was just a level of attack where I knew we were taking that preparation to performance, that we were going to do what we set out to do, and that's finish the game off. And so that was rewarding. I still think, you know, in the infancy of this program, you know, we still have a delicate ecosystem here. We have to really zero out, stay centered. The goal of the season wasn't to beat Colorado State. The goal of the season is to continue to improve and to, you know, put that fighting spirit forward every time we play. And so I'm anxious to get back out there at practice today. We need to have a better early week of practice than we did last week. That's something we talked about as we were experiencing it. It was disappointing to see the bounce back last Tuesday. So let's bounce back today and be a team that has a chip on their shoulder ready to prove themselves all over again.
There was a big opportunity for anybody, really, to step in there and be the tailback. Ramon Davis transfers in. He probably saw that opportunity. How did you like his progress from week one to week two?
He ran the ball well. He's so steady in pass protection, too. The thing I like about Ray's game is he's a student of the game. He's smart, and he anticipates well. He does little things that sometimes go unnoticed that spring big plays. And particularly on Saturday, I thought running the ball, it felt like, you know, he was, even when the run wasn't there, he was able to scratch out 3-4 yards, keep us on schedule. You know, those are things. Eventually, as we get, you know, our systems and the execution, the detail in the execution, and we really get this thing rhythmic, you're going to see those runs break, because he's talented enough to pull the trigger in a cut and go the distance. Right now, he's getting a lot of gritty yards, and he's doing a great job with that. And like I said, he's doing a great job in pass protection. And so as we keep syncing up as an offense, I expect to see him, you know, breaking some big runs.
We're talking to Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee here on Darren Donick and Chase. And you have an opportunity now with three straight home games, starting with Stanford this Saturday. And I know that has to mean a lot to you, as you, you know, you've talked about stripping this down from the very core to rebuild it. I mean, it starts with the fan base too, and their support. So what's your message to Commodore Nation as you now have three straight at home to try and get that place packed to help support these kids?
Well, obviously, an imposing crowd helps, you know, and we're excited to be back in our home stadium because we did not play well in it last time. And we understand that's our responsibility, too, to engage our fans at a level of competing and bringing that fighting spirit. We're going to practice all week in our stadium this week for the purpose of making a statement. And we're going to do some teaching and learning around that, too. But to the fans, I mean, this is a work in progress, but, you know, we have a team that's evolving and growing right before your eyes. You know, it's going to be a beautiful night on Saturday night against a good Pac-12 opponent. I think it's been a long time since we had a team from the Pac-12 here, certainly, or competed against a team in the Pac-12. So that's an exciting element. And we have a hungry team that's you know, coming off a nice result, but that's ready to prove itself all over again. So I think anyone that bleeds black and gold and is pulling for this football program will be excited to be in that stadium on Saturday night and cheer us on.
You know, we've talked about you're still learning your guys and they're learning you, and it's still a, you know, even though you're out doing work and trying to improve, it's still a little bit of a getting to know you with all of this, with your quarterback, with Ken Seals. You know, we saw him last year and saw a lot of positives that you can build on. What are maybe some things that you've learned in the short term that you know, you see that go, okay, yeah, I mean, I can tell that this guy's growing from week to week, from day to day, practice to practice?
Well, you know, he's tough. He's tough because he bounced back from a rough outing against East Tennessee State and started in a rough manner for our offense, you know, on Saturday. And you know, but he's tough and he's determined. He you know, he has confidence in himself, and he really gutted through that game. I mean, I thought he made some good throws. He found the one-on-one matchups. He obviously the 2-minute score at the half was huge, where he threw a rope to Chris Pierce and allowed him to make a play. The play before that, he had hit Devin Boddy, and Devin just wasn't able to hang on to it on a vertical throw too. So a lot of toughness there, a lot of resilience. I think so much room for improvement, which is what's exciting. I'm really anxious to see the quarterback receiver chemistry improve. We missed on a couple of third down option routes to Cam Johnson in the third quarter, start of fourth quarter, that would have extended drives. Had we been able to get to a 2-possession game against Colorado State, I think we would have had a chance to separate. And so, you know, getting in sync, getting in rhythm, you know, finding a deeper level of production and performance for him. But at the end of the day, with the game on the line, he's pulling the ball and ducking it vertical to get a first down, takes a targeting shot on that play to set up the game-winning field goal. And I think that's indicative of a guy that you want leading your team.
Coach, really appreciate the visit as always. Congratulations on that win. Best of luck Saturday against Stanford. We will talk to you next week. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you guys so much. Good to be with you, and we'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. That is Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. Big win over Colorado State to even up their record to 1-1. They win 24-21. I was thankful that they played that late game. It was great. I stayed up and watched it. I was watching them. I was watching BYU, Utah. Some fun college football late on a Saturday night. But they will be at home against Stanford. So another big one after Stanford came off a win over USC that we already talked about that got Clay Helton fired yesterday after our show. So Stanford will be coming off a big win at USC, and they will keep on the road and come all the way across the country to Nashville to take on Vanderbilt. That will be a good one. We'll talk about all that and more with Mitch Light on the other side as you listen to Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Sean. Good to see you yesterday at Vanderbilt Legends Club. Hey, if you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Rolling Stones, hello, at Nissan Stadium.
Hi.
That'll be Saturday, October 9th. I would like to have tickets to that. Seriously, do you have tickets to that, Chase?
I do not.
I don't either.
I've seen them twice.
See, I have not.
It's a good show. I recommend it.
Okay. Well, you've got that chance. All you have to do is head over to YouTube and subscribe to 102.5 The Game's YouTube page, and you'll automatically be entered for a chance to see the Rolling Stones. One winner will be chosen on Monday, September 20th. So keep that in mind. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, products curated for life. Mitch Light from The Athletic now joins us. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Darren. Hope you're doing okay.
Yeah, doing fantastic. And we were just talking with Clark Lee about their big win, and now they will host Stanford. So let's just start there. Yesterday, after we were off the air, he was in his seventh year at USC. I feel like we've been hearing whispers or hot seat stuff, or they're going to replace Clay Helton for about 5 years, but he has always survived. But I guess he has not survived anymore. They lose by a couple of touchdowns at home to Stanford, who's not that great, and they have decided to part ways after two games of Clay Helton at the helm in year seven. What do you make of it?
Not a surprise. I mean, anybody who follows the sport knows that Clay Helton has not been on the most secure footing, has seemingly found ways to save his job over the years through several different athletic directors and different administrations, and some of that was helped by a, you know, inconsistent administration, at times not wanting to spend money to make a coaching change. But it's just, it was a difficult situation. You know, when you know it's inevitable, you know, I think all of us who follow the sport closely say, was he going to be the coach there next year? Probably not, barring some, you know, surprising run, Pac-12 South title or Pac-12 title. So I'm always of the opinion, if you know it's going to happen, don't prolong the inevitable. It's awkward. But I think it's, you know, some people say it's not fair to the team. I think it's not fair to the team and the players at a school like that to have to answer questions all season long about your head coach when the administration has already decided what it's going to do. I think it was the wise decision just to go ahead and do it.
So that leaves it opening. We were batting some names around earlier in the show. Luke Fickell, who's Chase and I said would be a good one. Willie brought up that Joe Rexroth this morning on our morning show brought up James Franklin. So, one, what do you think of those two candidates? And do you have one of your own you'd like to throw out there?
I think those are probably the betting favorites. I would throw out James Franklin. He would be the first one I'd throw out. I've often said and that he would kill it in recruiting out there. He does well in recruiting at Penn State. His 2022 class is great. But Penn State's a great job. I believe him when he said it was his dream job. He's a Pennsylvania native. The problem of being the head coach at Penn State right now, and it's not a James Franklin problem, it's a Ohio State problem. Your division foe is a great program in Ohio State. It's at its all-time, despite their loss last week, it's at its all-time peak and as far as performance on the field and in recruiting. I mean, Ohio State is recruiting as well as Alabama and Georgia the last few years, and that's really hurt Penn State. Ohio State's gone into Pennsylvania and gotten some players that clearly Penn State wanted. I think you put James Franklin at USC where he is the top dog and, you know, can kind of control Southern California recruiting, and USC can also recruit nationally. I think he would do a phenomenal job out there. I think it fits his personality. I think James Franklin's happy at Penn State, loves his job, appreciates his job. Not saying he would take it, but I think USC is on the short list of ones he would consider.
Oregon didn't have Thibodeau, their stud player on defense in that game. He got hurt in their win in week one, didn't play against Ohio State. Believe it or not, they didn't need him. They still came away with the upset victory. Now they've lost five-star linebacker Justin Flo, I think that's how you say his last name, to an injury. It looks like Mario Cristobal saying he could be lost for the season. How many more hits can Oregon take on defense with their stud players, and how good is this Ducks team, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, Flo didn't play on Saturday either, so that was their two best defensive
players. Oh, so he didn't even play? I thought he got hurt. Okay.
No, he did not play, so they were at their two best players.
Jeez.
So that even makes the win that much more remarkable and impactful for for Oregon and for the entire Pac-12. It's sort of the culmination. It was only one game, we know, but it was sort of a culmination of what Mario Cristobal has been building there. They were very physical at the line of scrimmage, and they got good enough quarterback play from Anthony Brown. Their skill guys were good. A lot of it, you know, Ryan Day and Kerry Combs, the defensive coordinator, taking a lot of heat up there at Ohio State for the way they played defense and made things sometimes look easy for Oregon, but give Oregon credit. So They clearly have, you know, established themselves as a national championship contender, playoff contender. What they need now is Ohio State to go back to being great, because no one will have a better, you know, barring someone winning in Tuscaloosa or something, no playoff caliber team is going to have a better win than going to Ohio State and winning. So that gives them maybe they slip up in Pac-12 play. You know, maybe they lose one game. They could afford to lose one game if they have that win at Ohio State in their back pocket. So you can't overstate how enormous that was for the Oregon program and the entire Pac-12.
I know this is kind of broad and it's putting you on the spot, but who's a team that we weren't talking about, or maybe you didn't envision them being very good, but they've jumped out of the gates, they're 2-0, and you're going, you know what, they're a lot better than I thought. How would you answer that?
That is a good one. Kind of surveying the landscape a little bit. Iowa, maybe. I probably fell into the trap of thinking, okay, it's just an Iowa, a typical top 20-ish Iowa team, but this might be a top 10 playoff caliber team. You know, there's a big difference. We talk about a lot of being a national championship caliber team and a playoff caliber team. You can be a playoff caliber team and you know, be a good but not great team. To be a national championship team, you have to be elite. I don't think Iowa's elite, but to go into, you know, they won their first game against Indiana. They beat basically – I was beaten two off-season media darling teams, Indiana and Iowa State, two teams that got a ton of respect in the off-season, and they beat them thoroughly in both games, one of them on the road. So, you know, I think Iowa's an early-season surprise.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, you talked about the Clay Helton side of things, so the final nail is a thrashing by Stanford, who had lost their first game against Kansas State. Now we know Stanford comes to Nashville to play Vanderbilt. You gave us a good scouting report on Colorado State last week. So what's the matchup like? I noticed Stanford's an 11-point favorite at Vanderbilt, which is not a surprise coming in. But what kind of matchup are we looking at here?
Yeah, I mean, I throw out a lot of the cliches you hear with Stanford, though. You know, it's they go about it the way they have for years. They're a physical team. They haven't recruited as well at the line of scrimmage as they did 5-10 years ago, and you know, while David Shaw is highly respected, if you kind of dig deep inside the numbers, there's been a slow slippage from this program. They're no longer, you know, where they're not what they were 5-10 years ago, and you know, the Kansas State game was kind of a wake-up call for them offensively. And they played both quarterbacks there, and Jack West and Tanner McKee and McKee, and then went with McKee obviously against USC. And you never know in that game how much of that was Stanford and how much of it was USC just kind of falling apart. But obviously you go into the Coliseum and score 42 points, you're doing something right. Got pretty good running backs, decent skill. Yeah, I just think the overall, you know, again, they recruit well, but they had that stretch there in the, you know, into Harbaugh earlier era, really early David Shaw, where they were signing like top 15 classes, and that hasn't been the case there. So I don't think it's going to be a team that's going to wow you with their skill, but I'm sure they're playing with a ton of confidence right now, and they've got, for the most part, you know, a veteran offensive line, a lot of guys who've played a lot of snaps in the Pac-12, and also nationally they play a national schedule. In fact, they're the only team in the nation this year that's playing 12 Power 5 opponents. Their non-conference is Kansas State, Vanderbilt, and Notre Dame.
Wow. Interesting note there. So great challenge to see what Vanderbilt comes back with after getting that win. Now, a program that desperately needed a jumpstart type of win was Arkansas, and they got it emphatically against Texas. What do you think that means for Arkansas going forward this year? Are they maybe ahead of schedule here?
They're an interesting case study, because last year they were talked about, you know, program media darling. A lot of people jumped on the bandwagon early with them, and Sam Pittman clearly did a great job there. And you know, they got they were victimized by a bad call in the Auburn game. They could have won that game, but it's still a team that only went 3-7. He took over, and I say this all the time, you know, give Sam Pittman and SF credit, but also took over a talented roster. Like Chad Morris, the previous staff, just they were horrendous, but they did a decent job in recruiting. It was a top 25 roster nationally. So if you can come in with a new staff and you kind of everyone buys into the message, and they ended up having the right quarterback in Felipe Franks last year, and you get the right guys maybe like on the lines of scrimmage in the quarterback position, you can overachieve, and that's kind of what they did. They elected to go with K.J. Jefferson this year, a young quarterback. We had a story in The Athletic about David Ubben did about how they opted not to hit the transfer portal. They had faith in K.J. Jefferson, and so far it's paid off. You know, like I said before, they recruited well at the at the skill positions. They've got good wide receivers. So, just a monumental win for Arkansas. But then you step back and you look at them, and you know, where are they on the food chain in the SEC West? Like, who are they better than? Are they better than Mississippi State? Are they better than Auburn? I don't know. This team could still finish sixth or maybe seventh in the SEC West. Now, that doesn't mean they're not making strides and they're not, you know, on the right path and all that. It just kind of tells you how difficult life can be specifically nowadays in the SEC West, where there's really no bad program.
It's such a great, it's such a indicator of how far ahead Alabama is than virtually anybody else. They're going to Florida, who's got high expectations, and they're favored by over 2 touchdowns. Is there any chance that Florida can make a statement just by taking the game into the fourth quarter and having a chance?
Well, I remember the team that probably played Alabama the best last year, maybe other than Ole Miss, was probably better than Ole Miss, was Florida in the SEC championship game. Now, they don't have Kyle Trask, they don't have Kyle Pitts, so that's going to be, but that was a neutral site game. This is the home game. I'm really interested to see what goes on with the quarterback position at Florida. You know, Emory Jones is a rare bird nowadays, where he's a guy who just highly recruited quarterback who was patient and stuck it out at his school and didn't transfer. He's a fourth-year junior who's starting for the first time this year, and they said all the great things about him in the offseason. And I haven't seen much of Florida play this year, but those who follow it and what I read about, it sounds like Anthony Richardson, the redshirt freshman, has played, not a lot, but has played better. Dan Mullen has maintained he's going to play both quarterbacks, but like, what happens if Richardson plays better this week? Is he going to be the starter going forward? So that's kind of an underlying storyline there. And also, like you said, can they keep it close? That's sort of like what I guess people are talking about. I don't want to say it's been the quiet thing about the first 2 weeks, just how much better, especially with Ohio State struggling, how much better is Alabama than everybody else? And that's, if they go into Gainesville and they win this game by 21, 28 points, it's like what everyone else is playing for second in the SEC, and maybe they're playing for second nationally because they've been an absolute machine so far.
Talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. So how concerned should Notre Dame fans be right now, even though their team sits at 2-0? They survived against Florida State. They survived against Toledo. But, you know, certainly not clicking on all cylinders, so to speak, right now.
Yeah, clearly, Chase. I mean, we do this all the time, and that's what we do as college football fans and in media. We compare scores because that's really the only thing you can do. So you watch that Notre Dame Florida State game, and you're like, okay, that's a good win. Florida State looks like they've improved a lot, and then Florida State loses to a Jacksonville State team that got shut out by UAB. So what does that do for Notre Dame, who just, you know, had to eke out a win against Toledo? So not great. Just talking about the quarterback situation at Florida, Jack Cohn has played well so far. You know, Tyler Buckner, the freshman from San Diego, will he kind of elbow his way into the mix at all? We know they're good at running back in tight end. Defensively, they've been giving up a lot of big plays. You know, that stat's been floating around. Pete Sampson, who covers Notre Dame for The Athletic, something like, I don't have the number, but Notre Dame this year, through 2 games, have given up more plays of X yards, like 50-plus yards, than they did in 3 years under Clark Lee. So Marcus Freeman plays more of a, you know, risk-reward type defense. They're going to take some gambles, but you're going to give up some big plays. We saw that in the Florida State game. We saw that in the Toledo game. So, you know, the good thing is they're 2-0. The bad thing is they had to eke out wins over two. You know, Toledo's a good team, no doubt, but it's not like they're playing top 10, top 15 teams. So, you know, obviously – we'll see what they got. A big one against Wisconsin a couple weeks, and then a huge one October 2nd against Cincinnati.
Yeah, that one's going to be a lot of fun. Ole Miss plays Tulane this week, and then they have a stretch of 4, and you can even say 5 games: Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, LSU, and then out of that, they will play at Auburn. But those 4 games specifically, because you got teams kind of all over the place with Alabama at the top. What do you think the Rebels look like at the end of that stretch?
Yeah, I think the Tulane game's going to be fun. I mean, if you watched any of that Oklahoma game, Tulane's got a fun offense. I've been a big Willie Fritz fan for years, dating back to his Georgia Southern days. Runs a kind of a fun offense, a lot of option elements involved there, and they're always, you know, just very, very well prepared, and he's just one of the more underrated coaches nationally. So I would, do I expect them to beat Ole Miss to be 2-in? Yeah, but that one could be fun there. I don't know. Ole Miss could be, you know, they look great against Louisville. And how good is Louisville? We don't know, but they obviously showed major defensive improvements. You know, I think they've got a is it too bold to say they got a chance to go 4-1 during that stretch, lose to Alabama? I wouldn't be shocked if they go 4-1 during that. The LSU game's at home. Very good chance they'll be favored against Arkansas. Very good chance they'll be favored in Knoxville. And if they beat LSU, they could be favored at Auburn. So that could be a defining stretch for future USC head coach Lane Kiffin.
You had to throw that in there. Yes, you did.
He can have another press conference with him and his SID.
So does he get hired on the tarmac instead of getting fired on the tarmac?
I think there would need to be a ceremony.
Humor, that would be amazing. Press conference on the tarmac. It's crazy that, like, if Lane Kiffin had never been the head coach of USC, he might be the favorite to be that USC head coach, the next USC head coach right now.
But along those lines, I'm not saying he's going to go back to USC, but is he going to be the beneficiary of the coaching carousel? Like, if let's just play the scenario of, you know, James Franklin is moving around, and then you have other jobs that are going to open up later in the season. I mean, Lane's name's going to be out there, is it not?
Sure. And I've come full circle on him. Like, he clearly has matured. Like, he still likes to have fun, and he's a funny dude. Social media, he gets it and all that stuff. But, like, 5 years ago, I, you know, would have rolled my eyes if you said Lane Kiffin's going to be back in the Power Five. And I was like, this guy, he clearly, you know, he's loose cannon and all that stuff. But, you know, he's done a tremendous job at Ole Miss. They clearly have a fun offense. Got a great offensive coordinator. So I would... You know, is he a fit everywhere? I mean, I don't see Lane Kiffin at Penn State. I don't know why not, but, you know, it just doesn't seem to be a fit there. But if the fit was there and I were a Power 5 AD, I would clearly look at Lane Kiffin for the job he's done at Ole Miss.
So in power rankings of these SEC retreads, if you want to call them that, Gus Malzahn, Lane Kiffin, Hugh Freeze. How would you answer that as being sought after, so to speak?
Good question. I think the order you said it, Kiffin, Malzahn. I still think Hugh Freeze is too much damaged goods right now. You know, I think he would have been a stronger candidate for some SEC jobs more recently had that not been the case. I think I've always been a Gus Malzahn fan. Interesting to see what he does this year offensively, because his offenses were not great at Auburn last, you know, few years there, but I think he's in a perfect fit. I think he is a perfect fit at UCF, especially now they're joining the Big 12. I think their recruiting will probably be elevated just a bit there, and obviously a ton of skill guys in Central Florida. I think they're going to be good offensively under him. It's just how good can they be defensively. But those are three guys that for various reasons have all, you know, been very successful and then had setbacks. But if you can coach football and if you're good offensive mind, you're going to find a job. And all three of those guys right now are head coaches.
Well, Mitch, appreciate the time as always. We will do it again next week.
All right. Take care, guys. See ya.
He is Mitch Light of The Athletic. Joins us every Tuesday after Coach Lee around 1:20 or so. We'll come back, wrap up the show. But first, Willie, tell us about loans.
Going to be a fun 1-2 punch talking some college football during this day, this time with Coach Lee and then Mitch. What is it, the Light After Lee?
Yes.
Light After Lee, yeah. We're going to go with that. We'll see if it just has that natural stick-em.
We'll see if it sticks. If it doesn't,
takes a couple
then,
weeks,
you know, we'll
yeah.
move on.
It'll take a few weeks to kind of feel it out there. But a lot of fun college football games coming up this weekend. Meanwhile, Loan Pronto, as I've been telling you, we know the mortgage rates have taken the nosedive, and that means opportunity for you. Also, your home's value. If you live in this listening area, you know it's very likely your home value is high right now. Take advantage. You need some cash right now for maybe some different needs. Maybe it's to consolidate some debt. Maybe it's to pay off that credit card bill that you have. Maybe you want to do a home improvement project that you've been wanting to reinvest in your home, upgrade, make your house even more valuable. Well, Loan Pronto can help you with that. They can get cash out of your home's equity, and they can do it with a really good streamlined process. It's fast. It's easy. It's all digital. Virtually no paperwork required, and most of the loans get closed in 14 days. So if you act right now, you can be on track to getting that project done in your home or getting those bills paid that you need to pay right now. So call Loan Pronto. Don't wait any longer. Start the process before the rates go back up again and you don't take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of you. 615-499-5780 for Loan Pronto. That's 615-499-5780 or go to the website at loanpronto.com. If your current mortgage rate starts with a 3, you need to act now. 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781, subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero cost option.
If you're going to be out in the Cool Springs area on Sunday, you're looking for a place to hang out, watch the Titans try to even up their record to 1-1 against the Seahawks. That's where our pregame show will be. It's a really good one. It's going to be at the Corner Pub in Cool Springs. So just keep that in mind this Sunday from 1 until 3 p.m. Like I said, if you're looking for a place to watch the game and listen to our pregame show, Corner Pub in Cool Springs at 9200 Carruthers Parkway is the place to be. NFL pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Yum, yum. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Good stuff this hour. Our show is presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, products curated for life. We talked about losing a friend, someone that we used to work with back at the beginning of the show, and Dave Hull, learning of the sad news that we had lost him. Just saw on Twitter, Norm MacDonald gone?
Yeah, I saw that too.
Jeez.
Apparently he had a long and private battle with cancer.
Yeah.
Is what it said. So,
gosh. Willie, did we not have Norm MacDonald on? Did we not interview him many years ago?
I feel like he's been on here.
I do not remember. I don't remember that specifically.
Let me see if I can jog your memory, and I may just be completely making this up, but it's kind of a weird thing just to make up in your head. I feel like we were doing a show out in Cool Springs Galleria around the Drew Bennett Show, and Norm MacDonald came on earlier in the show.
I don't remember that.
We got into a bunch of SNL stuff with him, and I think, honestly, I think he was coming on because he was coming to Zany's.
Well, like, we've had a lot of comedians come through
doing
that. I just don't remember that one way or the other. Could have happened.
Well, he was awesome. My favorite was Weekend Update, obviously.
Yeah. Sure.
On SNL. But he was with that crew, you know, of in the, I guess, what, the mid to late 90s?
Sure.
That just, you know, was when SNL, in my opinion, was at its peak.
61 years old. Way too soon.
Yeah.
Way too soon. Very sad. But going back to that Titans-Seahawks game that we've been talking about today, you know, we're going to examine this more and more this week. But when you start trying to find ways or holes, I guess, in Seattle, that conversation's going to be pretty small, right? Like, where do you try to begin? And like I said, I know we'll get into this more this week, but what's their deficiencies? By the way, I think all three of us predict them to be a playoff team.
Yep.
So we knew they were going to be good, and they may be even a little bit better than we anticipated coming into the season.
Unlike the Packers, who had a lot of the obvious off-field questions, quarterback versus franchise, we know the Seahawks had a little bit of that. There was some displeasure thrown out there by Russell Wilson, but they came in and get a great road win in Indianapolis, which certainly did the Titans a favor by, you know, that sort of blunted the blow from the egg that the Titans laid. But here's an interesting connection, though. You had the matchup with Kyler Murray, which Kyler Murray played so well. You saw the problems that he creates when he's on. He played a great game, other than the one bad decision to throw the ball at the time and score that he did. It was just a bad throw that almost, or at least had a chance to let the Titans back into the game. To their credit, they didn't let it. He came back on the next series and had another fantastic drive. But defending Kyler Murray is not completely unlike trying to defend Russell Wilson. just moving. You know he's not going to sit back there. He's going to move. He's going to create. He extends the plays. He finds the guys down the field. He's got great weapons to throw to. So I don't know if it helps the Titans' defense to have a similar type of team you're trying to defend rather than something completely different. I don't know.
Well, they both are mobile, but Kyler's scarier with his legs because he's much younger. Russell Wilson has backed off from that, but he's not afraid to tuck and run, or he's not afraid to scramble around and buy time. He's just so smart. That's the scary part about
him.
Yes,
he knows how to buy time to make the throw. Buys time not to run, but to buy time to hit the guy down the field.
A very intelligent quarterback that will just make you pay. If you do one, you make one mistake, and he's going to make you pay. And that's probably the most scariest proposition facing the Titans defense. Like I said, we'll get into that more tomorrow on the program. Guys, that's going to do it for our show today. Good stuff as always. Everyone out there, enjoy the rest of your day. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Stay tuned. Stillman & Company is next.